This weekend starts right after this.
Support for This Morning with Gordon Deal comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. You're confident when it comes to your work and life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same confidence when it comes to refinancing your existing mortgage or buying a home. Go to rocketmortgage.com/Gordon.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
The integrity of U.S. elections. I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
The primary election season is underway. How can officials convince voters between now and November that the ballots they cast are protected from hackers?
A church in Maryland is trying a radical approach to attract new members. Hear the expensive giveaways.
Fox Television gave up on American Idol 2 years ago, but ABC is relaunching it on Sunday. Find out the strategy.
And the incredible growth of video games as a professional competition known as eSports. And doubting parents who became believers.
Esports is growing in popularity. It's video game competitions. We're talking about professional players who are competing in teams, much like what traditional sports, just it's a digital playing field instead of a grass field or basketball court.
Wall Street Journal reporter Sarah Needleman on esports later in the hour. With U.S. intelligence chiefs warning that Russian operatives are already mobilizing to mar the November midterms, fear and confusion over the integrity of the nation's election systems are running at an all-time high. Although some bellwether special elections have been held in recent months, the primary votes in Texas last week and Illinois in about a week and a half kick off the official contests that will determine the balance of power in Congress and in state houses across the nation. Dan Boylan, national security correspondent at the Washington Times, says state and federal officials readily acknowledge that the shadows that hung over the 2016 vote have not cleared. Dan, set the scene.
Well, I think that I really spoke to, in this piece, state election officials, and they had some major concerns in Texas and also Illinois, which is kicking off in a couple of weeks here. The concerns have to do with possible hackers, foreign hackers coming in and potentially fiddling around with voter databases, which could create real chaos. There's also the separate issue of just disinformation and weird propaganda and manipulative kind of basically crapola in social media, in the social media space across America that's making voters think weird things.
You know what I didn't realize until I read your piece was this line that you have that says the targeted states say it's still unclear how deeply hackers breach their voter registration databases. No wonder we still have questions. What's going on?
Yeah, that's an issue of, you know, state election officials across the country tend to be fairly calm folks who try to ride a little bit above partisan politics. And what some of the ones that I've spoken to have said that sometimes these allegations that a certain state might have been hacked get pulled into this big Trump-Russia collusion story.
Okay.
And then suddenly a place like, you know, North Carolina has got to go back and say, hold on, there were some funny things happened, but it wasn't, we now need to go out and explain to our voters that it wasn't like everybody's data got hacked, right? That there were phishing attacks. That's the one big thing that Russians probed a lot. That's, okay, as they say in the intelligence world, you kind of stick your finger in and see how far it will go.
Yeah, yeah.
Clearly in 2016, the Russians were out there trying to poke at a lot of states and figure out, what might we be able to get? So these states are still going back and asking each other and trying to ask themselves what went down. To take this a little bit further, sometimes the information that they need to learn about is really classified, and only the Department of Homeland Security and the big intelligence people in Washington would see how strange some of the Russian efforts were, because that information is actually classified, and folks in the states can't get to that information.
Interestingly
enough.
Yeah. We're speaking with Dan Boylan, national security correspondent at the Washington Times. We're talking about the integrity of U.S. election systems as we head into primary season here. So I know that there's various blame from the political sides being tossed back and forth, but looking forward here, what about fixes or addressing this or reassuring voters?
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think in Texas, they created a system whereby if any of the voting registration databases, anything suspicious or smelly seems to be going on, there's an alert that actually now goes out. I think that's a really good thing. These states are trying to assure people that it's okay. I think that there remains the issue of social media And that's up to Silicon Valley to stand up and really try and scrub its the space that it's allowed for people to advertise politics on. And there isn't that much being done there, but the Senate Intelligence Committee is trying to hold those guys' feet to the fire.
Yeah.
Facebook, Twitter, Google. But it's hard because those are powerful companies and they make money off of advertising. So it's tricky.
The simpleton in me says it does seem to be beneficial that states operate their own election systems, and it's not controlled by just the federal government, which would allow hackers to hack just one entity. But there is sort of an arm's distance relationship at times, right, between the states and the feds when it comes to this stuff?
There really is, and that's a big fight that goes back to last fall when a lot of these allegations first surfaced. With states like to say, listen, federal government, listen, Washington, we've been doing this in Massachusetts for several hundred years. We know how to do it. There aren't big problems. Don't cause us to feed into some big system that could be hacked. That gets into a little bit of the politics that you're talking about, where under President Obama, they declared that the overall country's election was actually critical infrastructure. So there's a fight between back and forth between Washington saying we want to control more of this and protect it, and states saying lay off. We want to do paper ballots. We don't want to even be hacked. We don't want to be plugged into any modern computers.
Mm.
That's a real philosophical battle that's underway right now.
Yeah, it'll be interesting come December, right? How we have processed how we did from the primaries right through the midterm election day.
Yeah, it really will be fascinating, and part of that probably will also be connected to Donald Trump, because in going back to this story, I did speak to some folks, you know, a couple of academics, and I didn't get this stuff into this piece, but on background, people were saying, yeah, you know, a lot of the disinformation out there that's aside from possible voter hacking into voter database systems, disinformation in this weird junk that's floating around the Internet, it's really hard to tell how much of an effect that actually might have had on some swing voters. Right? That's a
yeah.
real big question mark in people's minds right now.
Thanks, Dan. Dan Boylan, national security correspondent at The Washington Times. 13 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend.
Day one for a new employee. Instead of joining in productively, they face a confusing, disjointed process and piles of paper forms. With Kronos, you can automate the entire onboarding process, creating a better experience for employees and freeing you to focus on the human part of your job. HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping in one unified system, all with a proven implementation approach and simplified, transparent pricing. Learn more at kronos.com/onboarding. Kronos, workforce innovation that works.
Thanks for being with us. The opioid epidemic is reshaping life in America, including at the local public library, where librarians are considering whether to carry naloxone to battle overdoses. At a time when the public is debating arming teachers, New York Times reporter Annie Coryell says it's another example of an unlikely group being enlisted to fight a national crisis. Annie, what are you hearing?
There was a series of articles in the Philadelphia Inquirer looking at a library in Kensington, which is a neighborhood sort of in the middle of this notorious drug market. And they had been seeing patrons overdose, people heading into the bathroom to shoot up, people overdosing in the park outside the library. So they got trained to use Narcan. And there was a young woman there, Shara Kowalski, who by the end of last year, when the police sort of stepped in and started clearing out this area, had actually revived six people. And I saw that a New York congressman, a Democrat from Hudson County here in New York, had actually introduced legislation late last year to provide libraries in high drug trafficking areas around the country with Narcan kits and training, so that this would be sort of, if not systematic, because it would be voluntary, but it would definitely streamline the practice of librarians carrying Narcan.
Yeah. Are libraries, pardon the interruption, are they like a gathering place?
I wouldn't say a gathering place, but, you know, as a colleague said to me, you know, what's amazing is the elasticity of libraries.
Okay.
They constantly change and adapt because they really are serving the public. So that might mean being the only place with internet access in some places. In others, they will, you know, be in a downtown area in a smaller town across from a warming station or a shelter.
Wow.
And, you know, during the day, they're one of the few places where people who don't have anywhere else to go can go and stay warm, read the newspaper, figure out where to go to treatment meetings or, you know, treatment or NA, AA meetings. But it also, you know, a library has public restrooms.
Okay.
Until recently, these were unlocked restrooms. So it really was that this was an issue centered around the restrooms. The bathrooms became kind of the problem area for libraries in the towns that I looked at.
We're speaking with Annie Coriel, New York Times reporter on the Metro Desk. Anybody take a stab at how many lives have been saved by librarians?
That would be a good follow-up for me. Oh. I don't know. You know, part of the problem here is that most libraries don't keep records of medical emergencies, or they keep records of the emergencies but not the type.
Sure.
So they'll, you know, have a you know, roster of 911 calls but not exactly what happened. I think that what is remarkable is how librarians are adapting to this issue and trying to respond to it. By providing information, first of all, to people struggling with drug addiction, as well as, you know, continuing with all their scheduled programming.
Thanks, Annie. That's New York Times reporter Annie Coriel. It's 20 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Coming up next, why ABC is bringing back American Idol when Fox gave up on it. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. If you want to take your business to the top, take it to a top 10 state for business, Michigan. Contact MichiganBusiness.org today. Over the course of 15 seasons, the TV show American Idol went from cash cow to money loser for Fox, eventually becoming a victim of declining ratings and rising costs. But ABC is bringing it back on Sunday. Why? Here's This Weekend's Jennifer Koschenka.
2 years after American Idol ended on Fox, it's coming back on ABC. Here with a story, Joe Flint of the Wall Street Journal. Joe, American Idol kind of petered out. What makes ABC think it can be popular again?
Well, the funny thing is, even with the numbers American Idol was getting a few years ago, those numbers would still be okay today for ABC because the television viewing audiences continue to decline for broadcast TV. So the networks are looking for anything with any sort of brand that might bring an audience back, and ABC is hoping that American Idol can still do that.
Why did Fox drop it? Was it purely a ratings situation?
Fox dropped it because a combination of the ratings and the cost. The ratings had certainly declined. It was averaging fewer than 10 million viewers in its last two seasons, and the costs for the show weren't getting any cheaper. Over the course of American Idol's run, the judges became bigger and bigger on the show, and the cost for those judges kept going up, so that in the final season, Fox was spending close to $40 million on the judges there.
And Joe, isn't ABC going to be spending even more on judges?
Yes, they are. ABC is going to be spending close to $60 million on judges, judges and Ryan Seacrest. So Katy Perry is going to be making $25 million, which is more than the three judges on Fox's final season, Jennifer Lopez, Keith Urban, and Harry Connick, made combined. So they are going to have some much bigger salaries. Their production costs are going to be about the same. Even without the judges, American Idol is not a cheap show to make. A lot of the episodes are live. You're traveling. There's lots of music. It's a very expensive show. So ABC seems to think that they can make profits here. Pretty much everyone else I talk to in the industry seriously doubts that. So we'll see what happens.
We're speaking with Joe Flint of the Wall Street Journal. Joe, is it fair to say the show is mostly about the judges and not really the contestants?
That's been one of the challenges over the years. The show initially, of course, started out about the contestants. I mean, you had Simon Cowell, obviously being a big breakout star as sort of a tough judge. But it was about the contestants. But as the show went on and copycats started to emerge, it became about hiring bigger name judges, thinking that will be the way to draw people in. So we saw Ellen DeGeneres and Steven Tyler and other big names come in. And it's not that I think the talent declined, but the talent began to take second stage to the judges when you've got Mariah Carey on there, and it just became more of a distraction. Now, ABC has some big-name judges, too, so we'll see if they still manage to refocus more on the talent and finding the star, which is what, of course, drew people to the show in the first place.
Joe, what kind of an audience is ABC targeting?
Well, ABC wants the dream audience that all broadcast networks want. They want a show that kids and parents can watch together, which was what made Idol such a smash in its heyday on Fox. There aren't too many of those shows left, even on broadcast television. And so that's what ABC's going for. And there's some logic to be said that maybe that can do that. If ABC can get the 10 million or so viewers that Fox was getting, you can make a case that it's a success for them, because there are other factors that go into determining whether a show is successful besides the money. Idol takes up so much time on a schedule that's fewer shows that ABC has to develop. So yeah. If Idol's working, that's three or four other shows you didn't have to make.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Joe, how does the format work? Does it run in continuous nights, or what are we going to see?
It's pretty much the way Fox did it. I mean, they ordered 38 hours, which is a far cry from when there were 50 or so hours of Idol on a year. But it'll start out on Sundays and Mondays for several weeks, and then it'll wind up just being a Sunday night show.
Do you think it might be successful because people might want to get away from news and some of the bad stuff that's going on in the world?
Well, certainly we're all looking for distractions. You look at what the networks have developed and are developing, and we're seeing a lot of revival. So we're talking about ABC doing American Idol, but later on this month, ABC is bringing back Roseanne, which, of course, was a big 90s hit. NBC brought back Will and Grace. CBS is bringing back Murphy Brown. I think part of their theory is that some familiar faces and blasts from the past will bring people in and serve as a distraction from the news of the world.
This weekend's Jennifer Koshenka with Wall Street Journal reporter Joe Flint, 30 minutes after the hour on This Weekend. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and defense. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit michiganbusiness.org. Thanks for spending time with us. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Coming up this half hour, is helicopter parenting causing problems on college campuses? Also, video game stars have fans and fortunes and utterly baffled parents. Story from the Wall Street Journal. And the Maryland Church offering a chance to win salvation and a car. That story in about 20 minutes. Well, it survived the Great Depression, World War II, and endless gnashing of teeth about its good and bad points, and this month celebrates its 100th birthday here in the U.S. Daylight Saving Time starts its annual 8-month run at 2 a.m. Sunday. A brief history from Doyle Rice, weather editor at USA Today. Doyle, how'd it start?
First started nationally in this country literally 100 years ago this month, in March 1918, during World War I, when there was an idea to save money on coal, save energy, and coal was the first idea to kind of make sure that people weren't burning coal in the afternoon when they were up and about, and instead they'd be doing it in the morning when they were sleeping. So that was kind of the first, and then it waxed and waned locally for about another 30 or 40 years or 50 years before it finally became a national decision again in 1966 is when it became officially Daylight Savings Time.
Mm. All right, so as many people know, Hawaii and Arizona are holdouts. They don't observe this.
Right.
But it became national. So, but national in such a way that this decision was kicked to the states?
Yeah, actually, the states have the final say in whether or not they participate in daylight saving. And all they have to do is they have to register a request with the Department of Transportation, the Federal Department of Transportation, which is actually in charge of time zones and daylight savings. And apparently it is just kind of a formality if a state just wants to opt out of daylight savings time entirely. Both Arizona and Hawaii did that early on, soon after the law went into effect. So they've never been a part of it. And I think for a while parts of Indiana were not part of it either, but they did officially become followed it back about 10 years ago, I think.
We're speaking with Doyle Rice, weather editor at USA Today. He's written a piece entitled Daylight Saving Time is Almost Here and It's Turning 100 Years Old. I know selfishly I like having that extra afternoon of daylight here in the Northeast.
Oh, yeah, a lot of people do. Yeah. I think, it's interesting that the standard time is only 4 months now and the daylight time is 8 months. So it definitely is kind of odd that the standard is shorter than the exception.
There is an argument, right, I think by some that, is it daylight saving time where kids go to school in the dark?
Right. Yeah, when you shift the clock in the morning, the kids will, and you're basically switching that 1 hour of light from the morning to the evening. So if the kids are now, like this week, going to school when it's light, next week it could very well be dark when they're going to school for a while before the sunrise keeps getting earlier every day. So it seems like both sides to the issue have a lot of facts on their own. Each side seems to say they have science supporting that it's good to keep it daylight savings, and other people say, oh no, it's not. You kind of have to come down on one side or the other.
Thanks, Doyle. Doyle Rice, weather editor at USA Today. By the way, lawmakers in Florida this past Tuesday approved a bill to keep daylight saving time going throughout the year in their state. It now goes to the desk of Governor Rick Scott. But even if the governor approves, a change like this will need approval from Congress. It's 22 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Hey, glad you're with us. In the popular imagination, college offers an opportunity for young people to strike out on their own, right? Away from the watchful eye of parents with the safety net of an educational institution. But a new study suggests that for some affluent students, college is an experience still managed largely by their parents, and that may be fueling inequality. Market Watch reporter Jillian Berman has details on the study. Jillian, what's up here?
A lot of people think that college is a time when young people leave the nest, sort of go out on their own. But a new study suggests that for a lot of affluent students in particular, when they get to college, their parents are still managing a lot of the aspects of the experience for them.
Wow. In what way?
So, it's a variety of behaviors, but, ranges from helping through connections to get an internship, guiding class or major choice, and to even, sort of managing their social experiences, so helping get them into a certain sorority or, encouraging them to join certain clubs. It runs the gamut.
Wow. Wonder why, because I my parents weren't like that. They're like, you figure it out. You're a big boy. Good luck.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so there are a couple things going on here. One is that this study took place at a big public university. And so those can be hard to navigate. There's a lot of students. Not everyone gets a ton of attention. And so parents may feel the need to step in there. Another reason is I think, parents have, over the past several years, maybe have gotten used to, guiding their students in K-12, so it's a little bit hard to let go once they get to college.
Wow. I guess, how much of it, too, might be the fact that we're just spending so much money on college that we want a say in how the money's being spent?
Yes, that's definitely true. Parents want a good return on their investment, and the stakes are high, especially, as students are coming out of school. You don't want to put your kid in a situation where they might not be able to succeed job-wise or, might not get into the grad school that they want if you can help it in some way.
Mm. We're speaking with Jillian Berman, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch, about helicopter parenting at college. Now, that may give some kids a certain advantage. Is that wrong, by the way? Are are there critics of this, saying we shouldn't be helping this much, or it is an advantage for some kids?
Yeah, so there are definitely critics of this. And, you know, the author of the study, you know, noted that it's hard to really fault a parent for wanting to do the best for their kid. But the universities do also play a role in this. So, you know, they could provide more resources for students who don't have such involved parents. And they could also do more to kind of, you know, just subtly discourage the behavior. These days, a lot of colleges are referring to parents as partners. You know, they invite them in on the conversation, and you know that that may be part of the reason why parents are so involved.
Wow. Where does this go from here, by the way? Because we are seeing colleges at least say they're making an effort to bring in more lower income students, right?
Yeah, so colleges do say that they're doing that, and in some cases they are, you know, certainly working towards that, but especially at the, you know, the state schools, like the one studied here, they're dealing with state funding pressures. They don't have as much money as they used to, and so affluent students are, you know, a big source of revenue for them, so they are still looking to draw people who can pay full freight, so out-of-state students or in-state students who, you know, don't need any help financially.
Thanks, Jillian. MarketWatch personal finance reporter Jillian Berman in New York. It is 14 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today. Hey, glad you're with us. An estimated 191 million spectators worldwide now watch esports competitions once a month. This is where people play video games. That's more than double the number from 2012. By one estimate, revenue from corporate sponsorships, media rights, ticket sales, and other sources is on track to top $1 billion by 2019. The rapid rise of organized esports has bewildered many, perhaps none more than moms and dads who used to chirp about kids wasting time in front of a computer. More on the growth of esports from Wall Street Journal tech reporter Sarah Needleman. Sarah, what's happening?
What's happening is esports is growing in popularity. It's video game competitions. We're talking about professional players who are competing in teams, much like with traditional sports. Just it's a digital playing field instead of a grass field or a basketball court. And what the story really talks about is how, you know, these pros got their start. And we're talking about a very small percentage of people who make it to the very, very top, just again, like in traditional sports. But when they were growing up and honing their craft, a lot of their parents gave them grief. They said, oh, you're wasting your time. You can't go anywhere in video games. And that's because esports are relatively new, and most people just aren't aware that you can go pro. And it's not like, you know, parents have little leagues or Warner Football like is equivalent for esports. They really just don't know. And even if they watch their child, they just don't know if the kid's any good. Like, yeah. You can't tell if your kid is really talented at squashing digital, you know, virtual villains,
right?
Because you may not play those games, and they are quite complicated. Some of these games, they're not Pac-Man.
No question. So as you point out, some of them play on teams, and then those teams compete in different leagues. Where does the prize money come from, or how might somebody earn at least maybe a part-time salary?
Sure. Well, it's full-time. This is not what we're talking about here. Is full-time job.
Okay.
Just like, you know, if you're a full-time, you know, if you're playing in the NFL or the Major League Baseball, same sort of thing. The teams pay the salaries. The money comes partly from prize pools. So just, again, like in traditional sports, if you make it all the way to the Super Bowl, you're going to get more money. Same thing, there is an equivalent of the Super Bowl. Each video game esport is different, so they aren't all the same, but generally speaking, there's a prize at the end. But when you're on a professional team, you are paid a salary, you get health care, you get a retirement plan. And these sort of professional teams have only really started to start up in recent years, where they're, you know, organized to that degree. with such a structure. And the money comes from sponsorships, advertising, streaming on the online, merchandise sales, ticket sales. So it really does mirror traditional sports in that way when it comes to income.
Mm. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal tech reporter Sarah Needleman about her piece entitled "Video Game Stars Have Fans, Fortunes, and Utterly Baffled Parents." So, when I think of, say, football or baseball, I think of television rights, obviously, and that money. I assume that's not quite there to their level yet.
Well, there have been some. Esports has been on television. We've seen it on ESPN,
yeah.
And TBS has a show that it airs on network television. Most of the competitions in esports, though, are broadcast online, and so we're talking about revenue from sponsorships and advertising.
Mm.
And then also, the stadiums. These are packing stadiums, Madison Square Garden, Staples Center. So these are big, big events, just, again, similar to, your NFL or MLB game. Not quite as big as that, but certainly close.
Those are incredible numbers. Wall Street Journal tech reporter Sarah Needleman. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Glad you're with us. "Please God, give me salvation and a car." That prayer may have been uttered by more than a few people at a Maryland church last Sunday. The Washington Post says that's because Destiny Church in Columbia handed out 5 used cars to demonstrate God's goodness and to attract new members. The Post reported that the church gave away the cars to increase attendance at its new location. It was the first Sunday at a building in a strip mall for the non-denominational church, which has been around for about 7 years. Pastor Stephen Chandler said the church normally draws up to 1,100 people. Last week, the church gave away more than 2,200 tickets in advance of 3 services. The church added a 4th service, which meant it had to buy another car to give away. The 5th car was given to a family in need. Comments to the story on Yahoo were funny, by the way. One person wrote, "I have to know, were they all convertibles?" Another posted, "I guess the church was trying to save their souls," spelled S-O-L-E-S. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.